Welcome to Trigger Talk Radio with your host, Dick Kupke. From handguns to rifles and hunting to self-defense, even a bit of politics. It's time to exercise your First and Second Amendment rights. Call and join the conversation, 734-822-1600. And now, your host, Dick Kupke.
Well, good morning and welcome back to Trigger Talk. Here we are, March 20th already. Hope you survived the Irish St. Patrick's Day on Wednesday. That was a fun day. Let's see, what did I get? I got some Smith Wicks beer, some red ale, and we had some, actually, we had some Irish. I want to say almost like an Irish burrito. My wife looked up this recipe and they said, apparently it's really popular in Irish bars. And being as that we're not going out to bars and stuff like that, we thought, well, okay. And it was actually really, really good. Almost like it wrapped up corned beef and slaw and stuff like that in a tortilla kind of thing. It was pretty good. So hopefully you had a good week. It's been an interesting week with politics and stuff. We'll get into some of that today. We'll talk about different guns. There's been some new gun announcements. That's kind of cool. Let's see what else. Derek and I were just talking about, he always puts up this thing behind him. He'll have a background that you can have up when you're are on a Zoom meeting or something like that. And now he's got not Comerica Park, but the original Tiger Stadium up. And we were just chatting about the things we remember. Derek, what are some of the things you remember from Tiger Stadium?
I remember the distinct smell of hot dogs cooking on the grill walking into Tiger Stadium. That's the one thing that always stood out to me when I went there. And then, yep. Yeah. And then there was my first game I attended back in August of 1991. I got to sneak up to a seat behind home plate, and the Tigers were playing the Seattle Mariners, and I got to watch Jeff Kaiser strike out Ken Griffey Jr. to end the game.
Yep, those are neat memories that you have of those. I can remember going to some games there, and I remember the guys that you would go to your seats, and the guys would come with a rag and dust off your seat, and you were supposed to tip them, you know. And it was, I mean, just it seemed like such a homey kind of place. I also remember this, and Derek and I laughed about this. I remember in the men's rooms. Now, okay, ladies, you can go to get another cup of coffee or something right now, but I remember in the men's room they had these huge troughs to be able to go to the bathroom in, and it was like, oh my gosh, is this cool? And I got to say, when they tore down the stadium, you know, people were lining up to buy the seats and things like that. I thought, wouldn't that be cool to buy one of those troughs? My wife said, like, over my dead body, you're going to buy one of those troughs. So, and I'm looking at the picture right now, and the way it was closed in and the two decks, you know, like right on top of, I mean, it was so cool. And that reminded me too, the troughs this show's going downhill in a hurry. I remember a restaurant in Detroit. Where was it? It was on Camp Joseph Campo or something. Joseph Campo in Detroit. It's actually called the Ivanhoe Cafe, but it's also known as the Polish Yacht Club, if you can imagine that. Now, it's landlocked right in the middle of Detroit, but they called it the Polish Yacht Club, which is kind of interesting. But this is the story. Now, I can't say for sure. I was looking up some images to see if I could, but this may just be an old bar's tale, but I think it's true. They've got a big old bar in there. And, you know, like so many old buildings that have a bar and it's all, you know, dark wood and the guys would line up on it and stuff like that. And, you know, guys would have things like at bars that in the old days, they'd have like spittoons and stuff like that, you know. Well, the bar at the Polish Yacht Club had a trough. Yes, a trough. Yes, a trough like I was talking about at the at the Tiger Stadium, and it was so the guys could be leaning up against the bar and be drinking their beer, and they didn't even have to stop to go to the bathroom because there was a trough down by their feet. Now, if you can imagine, Derek's sitting there wondering if I'm actually making this up. No, it's true, Derek. There's a real trough there. So at any rate, let's get back to talking about guns now, or start talking about guns. Let's see. We do have some gun shows today. We got the Taylortown Gun Show, which is on Ecorse Road. I've been to that before. And the Cadillac Gun Show at the Wexford Civic Center, the State Line Gun Show in Montpelier, Ohio, and the Layton Hall White Cloud Gun Show in White Cloud, Michigan. And we've got a bunch, the Ashland Gun Show in Ohio, the Westland Mall Gun Show in Columbus, State Line, I mentioned that before, and the Akron Area Gun Show at the Summit County Fairgrounds. Missouri's got three, St. Charles Gun Show, the Mountain Grove Gun and Knife Show in Mountain Grove, Missouri, and the Sedalia Gun Show in Sedalia, Missouri. And gosh, to you guys out in New York, you're finally coming back, the NEACA Newburgh Gun Show at the Ramada Inn in Newburgh, New York. So we got some gun show activity taken off again. We're right in the middle of the month, so we don't have any new numbers. We're sitting at 725,987 CPLs. And it's interesting. I want to say mostly what we're hearing this week in politics seems to be the bit about, oh my gosh, the gloom and doom, the gun, all the anti-gun stuff, and including you get an idiot. Now, by the way, the guy, this isn't funny, of course, but the gun shootings in Florida that took place this week, where six out of eight people that were shot were Asian women at the massage parlors. And have you ever seen a guy that looked more like I want to say, and by the way, he claims it wasn't being an Asian that caused it, but or being that he was anti-Asian and hate crimes. No, he was a sex addict, he claims, okay? And I want to say, I don't believe that looking at him. So if you've seen pictures of him, you know what I'm talking about. Maybe a sex wannabe addict, but not a sex addict. At any rate, or maybe he was a self-sex addict. I guess that would be the case. Let's see. Unfortunately, they're using that as, again, anytime there's any kind of thing that they can, oh, now it's all the hate against the Asians, all us white supremacists and all our guns and blah, 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 and we got to take them away. And I got to say, they use, of course, you know that when anything happens like that, they mobilize an army of people with pre-prepared, okay, cross out blacks and write in Asians things that we're going to say, the press releases. Oh, cross out Muslims and write in Asians. Okay. You know, it doesn't matter what it is. They'll use that as an example to try to have anti-gun legislation out there. Interesting. This was just from this morning. There's a guy from Delaware named Chris Coons. He's a senator, Democrat, Chris Coons from Delaware. And interesting is that he was talking. You know, people think that the Democrats winning both chambers of Congress plus the White House, they got these great hopes for long sought after gun control measures. Oh, assault rifle bans, and we're going to take them all. Oh, yeah, we're going to take everything. But instead, they're starting to look at smaller measures. And this is not unusual because they realize unless they do something with the filibuster, and which is the 60-vote rule that says that you can't pass something with just a bare majority. You need to have 60 votes for something to pass, major legislation to pass in the Senate. They can play some tricks. They can attach it to a finance bill and call it reconciliation and things like that. But basically, they're starting to realize that, no, they're probably not going to be able to ram this stuff down our throats. And so with the Senate split 50-50, any gun control measure needs at least 10 Republican votes. Now, there were some weenies that voted for H.R. 1 or H.R. 8, the one that just came through, that, you know, with the background checks and stuff like that, but not enough to push it through. And those are people that they're trying to, oh, see, I'm not a big bad white supremacist Republican. See, I voted for some gun control. Yeah, see, look at me, vote for me. And I want to say that, but they won't be enough to get it past the 10 vote thing, okay? So, then they hope people will forget about it. And the shooting rampage, it wasn't in Florida, it was in Atlanta, I'm sorry, has not softened the Republican resistance to any new broad restriction on firearms. And so it essentially seems like what they're doing, and this is what Chris Coons said just yesterday, that they're going to try and maybe what we do is instead of going for the big, you know, the big kahuna, the big shebang, all of it, let's break it into little pieces. Maybe we can pass a small bill, you know, we can do that first, and then we'll pass a medium-sized bill. Yeah, that's the ticket. And so I want to say there's a lot of I'm backing off, because I think they're realizing that, you know what, even the voters that theoretically voted for Joe, Stumbling Joe, who fell down the steps to Air Force One yesterday, but even the ones that voted for them, supposedly, they are still part of that 300 million gun owner group or 280 million gun owners or whatever it is, 300 and some million guns in the country. They are gun owners, and they're worried about their own ability to defend themselves and stuff like that. And so they're realizing that some of these big things like the background checks and stuff may not get through. And you got to think about something. People talk about a background bill check. Well, that seems pretty simple. You already have a background check on almost all the guns out there because the FFLs, these people buying these first guns are going to gun stores. And there's a lot of gun stores around, and they are all federal licensed gun stores. So what they need to do is they need to do and perform background checks, okay? Well, they're going, well, but a universal background check is what we need. And so you need to have, Dick, if you want to sell a gun to Joe, and Joe, you want to buy one from Mark, and Mark's getting rid of a couple of his guns, and Carl and Joe, are, you know, Fred are wanting to buy them. Oh, well, you need to go and get those. Go to your gun store and have those checked. No, there's no gun registry. It's not going to be a federal registry. Well, in reality, realize that many states have, and they're called point of contact jurisdictions, and they hold on to firearm sales data. So it may not be a federal registry, but states like Michigan with your handguns, they absolutely have a record of all your handguns, okay? So if you think that by not having universal background checks, they don't have a list of your handguns, they absolutely do in Michigan. But there's only 8 states that require them for handguns, okay? And a lot of other states, Indiana, Ohio, around us and stuff, they don't require that. But you know what happens in a state that is a point of contact state, that maybe they don't require a license for handguns, but they require firearm sales data to be kept, okay? And you know what? That law enforcement is able to look up transfers on firearms within the state, okay? So you've already got a kind of like a half registry out there. Well, you know what happens if they make it to a permanent, like, universal background check, and they start going to check all of these things like, Dick, you want to sell a gun to John, let's say. Well, one thing that can happen is that there's a legal presumption in the laws and gun ownership laws that say that that gun could have transferred hands. I may have bought it from Paul, who bought it from Mike, who bought it from Joe, and now I'm trying to sell it to John. But the guy that originally bought it, Joe, it showed up as a transfer to him. Now, it's gone through two or three different hands before I bought it. I go to sell it to Joe, and we go to happily do our universal background check, and they say, well, wait a minute. This gun doesn't belong to Dick. It belongs to Joe, who bought it originally back in 1968. Oh. Well, no. Well, then you guys can't transfer that. Matter of fact, we're going to have to hold on to that gun until we figure out this transfer ownership and how Dick came about owning that gun so that you can legally sell it to John. Oh, did anybody think about that? That this could spell trouble for the gun owners? That how can I prove that it was mine? I bought it from Paul, who bought it from Fred, who bought it from Joe, you know, 50 years ago. So I want to say there are some things in this universal background check bill that could cause problems for all of us. So that's why they need to look at it very carefully, okay? Let's see. Here we've got, this is interesting too, and I know that we're going to be talking about politics some, because I do want to get to some gun stuff, but do you know that in Oakland, California, that homicides were up 300% this year? 300%, not 30%, which would be terrible, wouldn't it? Not even 3%, but 300%. Okay, but the city still plans on slashing its police budget by 50%. Well, it's got some of the Oakland councilors and stuff like that are starting to think, I don't know. Maybe we should, you know, this happened in Minneapolis. This happened in Wisconsin. This happened in other places where all of these people came out against, the police. Well, we need to get rid of the police. This is such a terrible thing. And, you know, Black Lives Matter and all that kind of stuff. But wait a minute, you guys have been cutting back on your policing and stuff and your homicides are up 300%. But you know, we're going to do it a different way. We're going to send out social workers when there's a crowd of people at a party and there's just been a shooting and stuff. We're going to call and send out unarmed social workers, and they will find out why did somebody do that? Why did they have to bring their aggressions like that? Did they have that? Maybe they hate their parents, or they had a bad childhood, or their neighbor touched their weenie when they were six. Okay, I gotta say, you know, this is what's going to happen when you can continue to demonize law enforcement out there. And by the way, people are starting to fight back. And you keep going. I think we all see what's happening on the border and stuff like that, that things are going to come crashing down. And I do hope that we make it to 2022 and that there's some in the polls, if they can be done legally and without corruption, some backlash there. Let's see. Boulder Gun Magazine ban was struck down by a Colorado court. Oh, yeah. Well, all these cities that come up with bans that say, well, you can't have more than 10 rounds in there, then that's all starting to get shot down in court from a legal standpoint. So, yeah, you can do a lot of blustery and stuff like that, blustering and things. But it's when you get to the legality of much of this stuff, it does not. That is why you have to be supportive of of company things like the Second Amendment Foundation and Gun Owners of America and the NRA ILA group that's not the Wayne LaPierre buy me my $100,000 suit part of the NRA. That is the group that is working out there to work on laws and work on lawsuits and things like that to protect our gun rights out there. Let's see, what gun proposal would have prevented the Georgia shootings? Well, you know what? First of all, never let a good crisis go to waste. That's what they say in Washington. But in reality, there is nothing that – apparently he got his guns legally. There is nothing in some of these new things here that would have actually stopped the shootings that took place down in Atlanta. Maybe they can do a gun buyback. This is what's happening in Decatur, Illinois, coming up on April 2nd. They got big signs out and stuff. Here's what they've got. If you want to bring in an assault weapon, they'll pay you $350. And for a shotgun, they'll pay you $75. And for a semi-automatic handgun or a revolver, $225. And for an AR magazine, they'll pay, and one of those deadly 30-round magazines that hold, you know, a 30-round clip, they call it, okay? The 30-round magazine, standard one. They will pay you $35 for an AR-15 mag. Man, they were all set. They were publicizing and all this. Then suddenly they just changed it. They had to change all their advertising and stuff because they found out that, you know what, $35 for an AR mag, that's more than double the street price of brand new P mags. Okay, so people were planning on going out and buying a bunch of them for $17 and come and turn them in for $35. Capitalism, I got to tell you. That's a great, it seems that the sponsors got word of their idiocy back, and they repealed the magazine bag back portion of it. So, oh gosh, isn't that amazing? These people come up with it. Now, by the way, here's a good lawmaker out there that actually came up with an idea, and I don't know why we don't do more of this. A North Dakota senator named Kramer, a Republican, he actually came up with an idea that says, and this would be a law that says that banks that discriminate against gun makers should lose their FDIC insurance. Kevin Kramer, that's his name. And I want to say that is a pretty good idea. And also, I don't know why we don't have conservative banks and conservative lending institutions and conservative IT companies that do conservative, things like Twitter and Facebook and stuff like that, that don't try to limit everybody's free speech rights. So I want to say good for and it would be a North Dakota senator who has actually, following in the footsteps of Kristi Noem, who is the governor of that state, who believes in the Second Amendment, believes in fairness. So this Fairness Access to Banking Act would say that if you are going to discriminate against a gun manufacturer, a gun trading company, a gun store, an ammunition company, or whatever, you lose your federal deposit insurance FDIC ratings. So that is a good idea, in my opinion. Let's see. When we come back, we will talk about firearms imports. And it's interesting. I was looking at the countries that they're imported from, and it makes sense. But do you know that firearms in the United States, and everybody kind of thought this stuff had dried up, because remember Obama shut off a lot of the importation stuff back when he was president, but then it got opened up again when we had a decent president, and the firearm imports increased 60% in 2020, and they're from some interesting countries. And actually, when you think about the brands and what countries they're from, it makes a whole lot of sense. This is Dick Kupke of Trigger Talk Radio here at Wham Talk 1600, and we'll be back with the second half of Trigger Talk in just a few moments. See you then.
Wham Talk 1600. Welcome back to Trigger Talk Radio with your host, Dick Kupke. Call now, 734-822-1600 to join in the conversation.
And we're back. And I was talking about 2020 firearms imports. And I was looking at a, I want to say, pie chart of the different brands. And you know, a full quarter of them are from Turkey. Huh. Actually, it shouldn't surprise you, because there's some brands that you may recognize. They're like Stoger. And Stoger, which sounds like it's not from Turkish, but it is a Turkish brand, is actually an affiliate of Benelli. And so you see a lot of Turkish shotguns that go, that thing looks remotely familiar. Well, they might be a Benelli copy. Additionally, Stoger bought a bunch of Beretta tooling years and years ago. So there's ones like the Stoger Cougar, which is an exact, except for finish, an exact replication of the Beretta Cougar. So there are a lot of Turkish guns out there. Next one, Austria. Well, what comes out of Austria? Glocks come out of Austria, right? So that's about probably another, 20% out of Austria. Then about 10 or 15% out of Brazil. Okay, that, you know what's out of Brazil? Taurus and some other companies that are made in Brazil. And also then the next one is Croatia. So Croatia, Italy, Germany, the Czech Republic. Now, this surprises me. Canada, okay. But I don't know what Canada makes. I'll have to look that one up. But the other thing is the next one is China. Well, yeah, there's a lot of Chinese guns out there that are interesting. I actually have, what have I got? I've got a pump shotgun that is a Savage 320, I think is the number on it. And it's an exact replica of an Ithaca 37 as a home defense shotgun. It's got a bottom eject pump and stuff like that. And it's made in a place called like Sun City. You know, Sun City, that sounds like Florida. No, it's in China, and it's actually a pretty good gun, and it's actually, so I want to say I consider it almost a throwaway gun, because if it broke, if I needed parts and stuff like that, I may not be able to find the parts for it, but I paid so little for it, brand new from Cabela's, that it would be, you know, it's worth it as a disposable kind of item. So at any rate, I thought that was interesting about the different firearm importers. And to say, I had a note here from last week. We had Jack from Dexter call, and he called and talked about carrying a revolver in his pocket. Okay. Now, that is not all that unusual. I would only carry a gun of any type in a pocket if I had a pocket holster for it. But they do make, and revolvers have been known for being pocket guns, like for in a jacket and stuff, especially ones that have either the spur removed from the hammer, or if they have encased hammer, so that there's nothing to catch in your pocket. And actually, people, you know, not that you would necessarily do this, but they talk about, well, you could even fire it, one with an encased hammer, like some of the Smith & Wessons and stuff, that you could fire it. Actually, some of the Ruger LCRs are like this too, where the case, it's an internal hammer, and you could fire it from within your pocket without having to withdraw it. Now, you'd ruin your jacket, obviously, but if you needed to, that would be a possibility, right? That all assumes that the firearm is loaded and ready to go. So Jack had thought, and he asked my opinion on something, that he carries a revolver in his pocket, but he carries it unloaded, okay? Because then he doesn't have to worry about it not being in a holster because it's safe, because it's not going to inadvertently discharge in a negligent discharge or something like that. And he said, I carry it unloaded in my pocket, but then if I'm going somewhere where I anticipate needing it or might need it or a bad area of town or something like that, that I will then load it and then I have it ready to go. And I want to say the flaw in that, and Jack, I'm glad you called, because this is not unlike people that don't carry around in the chamber, okay, is that you don't know when you're going to need it, okay? You don't know, for example, now, I'm not talking about the mean streets of Dexter, okay, by the A&W, or what is it, Haas transmission up there, or is it Hayes transmission, next to the A&W, or the old Huron camera thing, or well, maybe out by Stivers, I don't know, maybe you're out at Stivers getting stiverized, as a friend used to call that. He goes, yeah, we were out at Stivers getting stiverized. Apparently they have a what's known as a strong pour out at Stivers, but at any rate, you don't know when it's going to happen. And that's the same thing with, like, if you're carrying a semi-automatic without a round in the chamber, and you think, well, when I withdraw it from my holster, I will be able to rack the slide and prepare the gun to fire. That assumes that you have your weak hand available to grab the slide and rack it. Now, I've talked about this before, because if you don't have a round in the chamber, you're only carrying a 30-ounce block of metal in your holster, okay? And so let's say you're pumping gas, and a guy comes around the gas pump with a knife or a gun, okay? Now, you go to pull your gun, but you've got to use your weak hand to hold him off. You're trying to hold that hand of his that's holding that knife while you pull your revolver or you pull your firearm. Now you're trying to rack the slide. Well, yes, you can theoretically try to catch it on a belt loop and rack on the rear sights and rack the slide. Or you can try to take the rear sights and jam it against the side of the gas pump and push it forward to rack the slide. But you can't count on that. And you can't say, hey, guy, hold on, I got to rack my slide here, because that won't work, okay? The other thing is if you have, let's say you're at a 7-Eleven or a party store or a gas station or anything like that, anywhere along between Dexter, which you may consider safe, and Ann Arbor. But how do you know that if you had to stop for gas at the, or you're going to stop at Popeye's out on Baker Road, or is that Baker or Zebra Road? I don't remember. But the point is that you don't know who you're going to run into along a highway or something like that. So I want to say, Jack, I applaud you for having a CPL and carrying a firearm. I would suggest that you have it ready to use, and that you will never know when you are going to need it. And so that's the only fly in your ointment right there. So I remember a story, and for those of you who have listened for years, you've heard me tell this a couple times, but there was a police officer, and like the chief of police or something like that, and he was at a opening of a museum, and his guys were providing, you know, an art museum, and his guys were providing a security for it. And it was, you know, one of these hoity-toity kind of things where people are, you know, dressed to the nines and all this kind of stuff. And the lady who was in charge ran into the police commissioner and said, oh, Commissioner, I see that let's call him Commissioner Gordon. You know who that is? That's Commissioner Gordon, was the police commissioner on Batman. Remember him? Commissioner Gordon, I noticed that you're carrying your sidearm tonight. Are you expecting trouble? And the commissioner said, no, ma'am. If I was expecting trouble, I would have brought my rifle. Okay. The point is you never know when you're going to expect trouble. Okay. So that's interesting. And I just think, Jack, rethink that. If you're concerned about the safety of carrying a revolver in your pocket loaded, then consider a pocket holster. I wear a pocket holster with my pocket guns, and I like several different kinds. And I like the one, especially on my Ruger LCP, that when I pull it out of the pocket, there's like a little hook area in the back that catches the back of my pocket. And it leaves the holster in the pocket, and I can withdraw it clean. So at any rate, that's a little bit of follow-up from last week. And, you know, I was actually wasting some time on the internet. Yeah, I know. It's amazing paths that you can go down. And so I've talked about this before. Some of the guns I really like, and I was with my grandsons, a month or so ago. I had actually, Keegan was on and was talking with me on the radio the next morning, and we had been out shooting single action revolvers, single action 22s, and I really like single action 22s. I like the Ruger single six, which is quite pricey actually, but as I've mentioned before, Ruger has come up with one called the Wrangler, which is actually, I want to say it's got an MSRP of $250, but it actually goes for usually about $199, $179, something like that. And it's a single action side gate loading 22 that looks like an old, you know, Colt Peacemaker or something like that. And I've talked about that, and I think they're outstanding guns. Then I realized, and I was looking up the guns that we were shooting, which are, it's called a High Standard Double Nine, okay, which is actually it was made in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, and even into the 70s. And it was a lesser quality gun, but it actually was a double action, nine shot, single action styled, you know, like cowboy revolver, but it had a double action trigger and it had a swing out cylinder. And so I'm reading down that, and I'm reading about the different ones that they make. And I look at the one that that we liked, the 4-inch barrel one called an Ombre, which is pretty cool. The Ombre, that's probably racist now to call somebody a gun an Ombre, but, which I think means friend, but I'd have to look that up, Ombre. And then I was reading on down, and I looked at the model numbers and when they were made. Then I found the other one that we used. It's called a J.C. Higgins Ranger. And I think I've talked about this before, where actually J.C. Higgins was, actually it was J. Higgins, was a guy that, he was like an accountant in the accounting department at Sears. And they said, we need a name for our sports equipment and stuff like that. Well, let's call it, let's see, well, hey, J.C. Higgins, that sounds good. So they started making J.C. Higgins bicycles and guns and stuff like that. Well, it turns out that the one that I have is quite rare. How fun is that? Okay. So then I'm reading farther, farther, farther. And, you know, there is no loss of rabbit trails you can go down when you are on the internet. So I'm reading along. And I remembered there's another gun that is quite often you see it. I want to say you see them in Dunham's ads, you see them in Rural King, you see them in different places, and it's called Heritage. And they are and I did not know this. I knew they're a lesser brand. They're a value gun. They actually are finished fairly nice, but they're not quite as smooth as like a Ruger single action, Ruger single six and things like that. But they make a ton of them. Well, I did not know that Heritage Manufacturing is one of three brands that is owned by Taurus. So Taurus Holdings, they make the single action 22 rimfire revolvers. Wow. And then I'm reading through them, and I'm going, wow. So the you know, and it's, again, it's got a side gate for loading and stuff like that. And it's a lot of fun to shoot, and they're cheap. They're like $119 or $129. And they make a ton of different ones. Well, they actually make them in Florida. Okay. And I think they make some of the parts in Brazil too. Remember, we just talked about imported guns. Okay. But they're made in Florida. And they have CNC machines. They have, all sorts of, I was looking at a story that showed, naturally here I'm looking at stories and I'm wasting time on the internet, but I'm looking at the manufacturing process and how they polish them and blue them and stuff. And then I look at some of the different ones that they've made. They've got a cute little one, and I think I mentioned this a couple months ago, called a Heritage Barkeep, which is a .22 revolver that has a short barrel and a small frame, kind of like the little, I just forgot it. What's the Ruger Bearcat size, okay? And then they make one called a Rancher Carbine now, which is like a .22 revolver, but with a very, very long barrel and a buttstock on it. Then they make one called a 16-inch Rough Rider. So when you're talking a 16-inch barrel on a revolver, you're talking a pretty long barrel. They have a 9-shot Rough Rider. They have a little one with a bird's head on it, kind of like you would think from a Derringer, that's a Rough Rider. And then they actually make some big bores, and they make them in .357 Magnum and .38 Special and .45 Colt. And I want to say that is pretty cool to me. So I think that, and you know what, in this day and age where people are worried about going out and shooting ammo because it's so darn expensive, that a day at the range in a with a single action revolver, you can have a ton of fun and it won't cost you an arm and a leg. You might spend $30 on ammo. That 500 rounds for $30, isn't that about right now? Isn't that what they're, I think that's what it's going for, $30 or $40, compared to you went, tried to do 500 rounds of 9mm, you'd spend $500 on it. So think about some of these value guns. And by the way, they can be in decent shape, even used, especially the Ruger single sixes, but those continue to go used, even a used one for $400 to $600. So that's why I'm saying these Heritage ones and these Ruger Wranglers are a neat value way to get into shooting, to take your grandkids, your kids, your spouse, your friends shooting at a reasonable cost. Okay. Let's see. This is one of the interesting guns that was introduced this past week, just on March 15th. And it's, Monday, March 15th. And Ruger just announced it. It is the Ruger Max 9. Well, what's that? Okay, well, you know, look at the popularity of things like the Springfield Hellcat, the SIG P365, Max or XL, all of these very small micro nines. Now, I got to say, they're not going to be a whole lot of fun to shoot. Okay. And when I shot that that Hellcat, Pastor Rick's Hellcat, to kind of break it in for him, okay, after 100 rounds or so, you start to feel it, okay? Actually, after a handful of rounds, you start to feel it, because the thing about a small gun with not much mass, that recoil goes somewhere and it goes in your hand. Well, Ruger had been making the, you know, so like the LC9 and stuff like that. They were little single stacks and stuff. Well, not to be outdone, but they just came up with this one called a Ruger Max 9, which I think is interesting. And being that I seem to have Ruger-itis and need to get whatever the latest gun seems to be from Ruger, I see one of these in my future probably. But the point is that it is a small 9mm with 10 and 12 round capacity. The 10 round is the flush magazine that's absolutely flush with the grip. And then the you can change to a little one that's got like a little bit of a finger, an extended mag grip, or a floor plate that sticks down a little bit, lets you pick up your third finger, okay? And you can still wrap your little finger underneath. But it is a nice little, not much bigger than the Ruger LCP, as LCP2. And so I can imagine one of these in my future. I, as long as you know what you're getting into, if you ever have to shoot this thing in anger, you are not going to notice the recoil because of the adrenaline pumping through your body and stuff like that. But it will be a handful. But I want to say the Max 9, and typically, like anything else that Ruger comes out with, it's reasonably priced. It's has an MSRP of $499, so it's going to be probably $450, something like that. Maybe for a little while they'll be at MSRP, but I think that it looks like a neat thing. And it's interesting, by the way, that the day after it was announced, Viridian announced laser sights for it. So that shows you how well these companies are working these days with the manufacturers. That it used to be that something would come out like this Ruger Max 9 and everybody go, oh, ooh, ah, how neat. And then you'd have to wait 6 months for the other companies to tool up and build the lasers for them and things like that. And here they are with one 2 days later and all their advertising and everything. So I want to say, and by the way, the green E-series laser for it is visible in daylight up to 100 yards. So that's pretty cool. Okay. Another gun that I looked at that was an interesting story, and by the way, they're going for a lot of money. The Mossberg 590A1 is a military-grade shotgun. It is a pump shotgun, has a full-length tube. It has what they call their retrograde series, and it has wood stocks, wood pump, forestock, and stuff like that. It's totally looks like a gun from the 70s, and all of a sudden, people are going nuts over this thing. And by the way, they are paying up to double. It's got like, I want to say the four stock looks like a corn cob. It's got, well, it's got the ribbed stock. It's, now mine, I have one, but mine is polymer. And, but this one here, oh, cool. It reminds me of the guns that we would have when we were kids. I said, oh, yes, I had a 598. No, I didn't. I had a Mossberg 500. But the point is that it reminds me of guns that, and they call them retrograde. And people are enjoying them, and they are very reliable. It's got a set of peep sights on it. It's got this top of the barrel has a heat shield on it. It's got a Picatinny rail. It's just a neat gun. And so it's sitting out there at about, oh, I want to say $699 or something like that for an MSRP. But nowadays, right now, I'm sorry, the MSRP is $987. Brownells was carrying them for $870. And people are actually paying double to get these things right now. So very interesting. Take a look at it. A lot of fun today. Not any calls today, and that's fine, too. I think everybody's trying to enjoy the nice weather out there. We're going to have 60s all week, and it's going to be a fun day today. When we get back next week, we'll talk about Barnall Russian ammunition. This is Dick Kupke at Trigger Talk Radio at Ram Talk 1600. I'll see you next week.